when it hits 10, I'll say something. Okay, I'll say that. Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Ruth Adelson and Hope Layton interviewing Max Bluestone, June the 5th, 1995. Max, would you please tell us your address?
220 North Dethridge Street.
Could you tell us something about your early life with your parents?
You have it on play, too?
Yep.
It works. I believe that's how it works. Would you tell us something about your early life, your childhood?
Sure.
Okay.
I was born on Dinwiddie Street, which is on the Hill District. I lived there until I was 18. I had a wonderful childhood. I spent a great amount of my time. I went to Miller School and from there to Fifth Avenue High School. I was extremely active at the Byron Kaufman Settlement and over the years made many friends there. I just can tell you that recently I spoke about growing up in the Hill District and what we had at that time. And I would say many of us who were born there and raised there found our experiences were most unique. My particular experience growing up was both as a participant at the Byron Kaufman Settlement and in many of the activities, including the gym programs and in their shows. And I was in many of those shows that they had over the years. And it brought me lots of friends. After I graduated high school, I went on to Pitt, and we moved to Squirrel Hill. Now, having spent the several years at Pitt, I had to go into my father's business when he wasn't well, and then from there into the Army. And that was my early childhood.
Well, can we backtrack a little
sure.
bit? Can you tell us something about your mom and your dad?
Yeah. My mom was foreign-born, a wonderful person. She was born in Russia. My father was born in Russia. Neither of them had formal education. My father was able to develop a good-sized business without a formal education. My mother was a typical mom and housewife and was active in many of the organizations at that time. They were members of the Kesetor Synagogue. K-E-T-H-E-R, Kether Tor, T-O-R-A-H, Kether Tor Synagogue, which was located up on Webster Avenue.
This was the synagogue to which your family belonged?
Family belonged, and I was bar mitzvah there.
Okay.
And my father, in the early years, was in the scrap metal business. And was very successful until the Depression hit. And after that, he decided he was going to go back into it after he went out of a big business, went in small. And from there on, he grew. And I, in 1934, 35, I joined him while I was going to college. And that's the beginning of our lifestyle.
What was your father's name?
Leon.
And your mother?
Rebecca.
What was her maiden name?
Silverman.
Did they come with any other family members? Can you tell us
yes.
something about their
sure.
coming to Pittsburgh?
My father, when he came to Pittsburgh, he came because an uncle lived here. Mm-hmm. And he spent some time here, then went on to Chicago.
Your dad did?
Yes.
Okay.
And decided to go into work for a scrap metal company. That's where he got his experience. and decided after a while that he wanted to have his family around, so he came back to Pittsburgh. And as it happened, he met my mother, who was a young 19-year-old at that time. And they decided, they got married. He went into, the first business he was in was the grocery business, which he didn't like very much. From there, he went into the scrap metal business. And over the years, that's where the family business of the week continued on.
Could you tell us something? You have some siblings?
Yes.
Could you tell us something?
My sibling, I have two sisters. I had two sisters. I lost one sister. My living sister is Esther Morrow. My sister that passed away, her name is Sylvia.
M-O-R-R-O-W.
The sister that passed away was Sylvia Schutzman. My mother had two brothers who lived in Pittsburgh. And their name was Frank Silverman and Ralph and Sam Silverman. My father had two sisters and a brother at that time who lived here. And their names were Sarah Dichter, D-I-C-H-T-E-R, and Rose Netzer. And the brother's name was Aaron Bluestone, who eventually moved to later on, they moved to California.
Could you tell us something about your Jewish home life?
Sure.
How you lived as Jewish people?
We lived as, I would say, Orthodox, yet on the conservative side of our Jewish religion. I was went to Hebrew Institute. I also had a private tutor who taught me Hebrew. My mother was very strict with the kashrus, and we never had anything but kosher food in our house, and she kept very strict about that. My father, who was out in business, he was considered very active in his synagogue, but he, due to business reasons, couldn't. He worked on Saturdays and things of that type. Which in those days, many people just didn't work on Saturdays.
Did they work on Sundays?
Our business never promoted concern. We didn't have to work on Sundays because it was closed.
Okay.
And he started the company, Bluestone Metal Company, which was located down on Penn Avenue, and then eventually went out to Corliss Station. Oh no, sorry, it was located downtown, then out to Corliss Station in the West End.
The Penn Avenue, was that?
That was a different company it was part of. That was a company we had before the Depression, known West Penn Waste Products.
That was your father's first company. West Penn Waste Products. And then came the Depression.
Came the Depression, then he went in business for another, started a company called Bluestone Metal Company.
Okay, when he went back a second
back
time.
Here.
What was the amount of time between the first and the second business?
About 2 years.
Just 2 years?
A year.
He regrouped.
Regrouped and went back.
And opened again.
It was difficult, but he did it. I was very happy that he did.
Sure. Were your grandparents here in this time? Did you know any grandparents?
Yes, I had a grandmother and a grandfather here. My mother's mother and father lived here.
I see.
My grandmother died at the age of late 50s. And my grandfather lived to the age of 92.
Oh my, those are good genes.
Oh yes.
Did you see much of them as children?
Well, I used to see them once a week at least, sometimes more. Uh-huh. My grandfather used to see more in later years.
Uh-huh.
He lived with us for a while, which is the usual thing, and then eventually he moved in with another family.
Uh-huh.
But it's interesting with my grandfather, when my grandmother took sick, and even before that, my grandfather retired, and my father was his benefactor.
Your father took care of him?
Took care.
From that time on.
Which was not unusual, wasn't it?
No, I know. How did you celebrate holidays?
We celebrated in the full blast. I mean, did everything.
Did you?
Yes. We had the large family get-togethers.
Uh-huh.
We would go to the synagogue. And Yom Kippur, I remember sitting in the synagogue all day. It was We used to climb up the Woody Street up to Webster Avenue, but it was nothing. We thought nothing of it.
In other words, you walked to the city?
Oh, yes.
Did you, did the women sit separately from the men?
No, they sat separately from the men.
I see. So it was truly an Orthodox.
Truly an Orthodox congregation.
Central. Uh-huh. Could you tell us something about your religious education?
Yes. My religious education consisted of going to a Hebrew school. I went to Hebrew Institute for a while. And after that, there was a rabbi that came and gave me special training. And then I went to the religious school, the Sunday school of, it wasn't a Sunday school. It was originally a religious school. We taught religion at the IKS. They had a program there.
Was this after school?
This was on the weekends.
On the weekends.
After school was the beginning part of it. Then on the weekends, and then this program that they had up there.
So
we were pretty well versed in what was going on, plus the family, everybody knew.
So you didn't get your bar mitzvah training at your synagogue?
No.
And where was the Hebrew Institute located?
Wiley Avenue.
Can you tell us something about your life at Miller School?
Sure. I didn't live too far away. It was about a 6-block walk. And I was put in there when I was in the first grade. I remember my mother telling me this is where I'm going to go. And eventually, I was lucky I had a dog. He used to wait for me outside of the school the whole time. We lived not too far away from the school, considering today's distances. And my experience there was good. Met lots of friends there. I guess like everything else, it's being happy in your surroundings, and I was.
You just liked it there?
I liked it there. We went to the end of the 6th grade, and then the 7th grade, we transferred over to 5th Avenue High School, which had a junior and senior high school.
Did you have any teachers in elementary school that you remember that were memorable?
Yeah, but I can't remember their names.
That's okay. You can visualize
yes,
them.
Yes, there were several of them.
Okay. And from there, you went to 5th Avenue High School.
And
could you tell us something about
sure.
that?
5th Avenue High School, I went there as a junior high student, you know, 7th grade. And there it was a little overwhelming at the beginning. But then again, we had a mixture of many ethnic groups there. Although the Jewish students were predominant, but we had people from all over that were there, such as the Polish, the many Catholic students. There were some Chinese students. Not too many black students when we went to school. And we started with a class of 100, it was a mid-year class, and we started with a class of 180, and we graduated 76, because depression came in, and many of them went to work when they were 16 years old.
They had to drop out of school. I see.
I worked during that time, too. I worked after school.
Worked while you were in school.
Yeah, I worked. Uh-huh. I had a newspaper stand.
Did you?
Yep.
Where? Tell us about it.
I had a newspaper stand. I worked for a fellow that owned it. I was his assistant at the old Duquesne Light building, which was downtown. I used to walk from 5th Avenue High School down to the building, and I helped him.
You manned the stand?
Manned the stand there.
After school?
After school.
All kinds of weather?
Oh, sure, all kinds of weather.
But
didn't hurt us.
Okay. Could you tell us something about your bar mitzvah, the bar mitzvah itself?
Yeah. As you can see, I'm not short. When I was bar mitzvah, they had to get a little stand for me because I was so short.
Is that right?
And so that I could reach the bimmy there. And it was an outstanding, in my eyes, it was an outstanding event to think that here I was among all our family and my peers when I was bar mitzvah. Of course, I didn't make the fuss as I do today. And from then on, I was able to go to Minions, and I was called upon. And the important thing was that we were now considered a man, you know, part of the synagogue.
So it was an important milestone.
Oh, yeah, it was a milestone in my life.
Did you have any festivity? What kind of festivity?
Yeah, we had a kiddush afternoon. Mm-hmm. But that was the extent. We didn't have the big things at that.
A lot easier for parents.
Yeah. Family got together afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you tell us something about Pittsburgh as it was then, as you remember it?
Sure. Well, as I remember Pittsburgh in those days, although it was the 30 city as we knew it, sure, we used to get the soot and everything because we didn't live too far away from the steel mills. But still, it was, in my eyes, a great city. And the fact that we were able to be with all different kinds of people, never feared anything. And many of my friends weren't Jewish, they were non-Jewish, but we were, didn't matter. And I was lucky enough to play basketball at the Yikes and made a lot of friends there, including what I told you before about the shows and all. But Pittsburgh generally was unique in its way because people were very friendly. People that came over from the old country, they were accepted right away. It isn't as it is the day they're outsiders. They were accepted right away. And I remember going downtown many a times by myself, never thinking twice about it. I remember working the football games on Saturdays where I sold souvenirs and would walk up and down the street in front of the stadium 1,000 times. But that's what we all did that. And it wasn't unusual because that was the way it was. But the city itself was beautiful, even though it was full of soot and all. And I miss that type of a feeling today.
Friendly.
Friendly feeling.
Safe and friendly.
I was safe and friendly. Never thought twice about it.
What did you do for recreation when you were a kid?
What I did before I began going to the Ikes when I was like 6 and 7, we had a field in the back of our house, a small field. We used to play a lot of ball. We played on the street, different games, and usually when it got dark, we were called in. So there was no activities at night. We had a radio, we'd listen to the radio. And my father used to have it, and mother used to have it, primarily my father had discussions with us about what we did during the day and what went on. So I would say that what the children of today have, we didn't have, and nor did we know about it, so we didn't miss it.
How would you say economically it was for your parents?
We never felt the depression as many did, because my father was the kind of person who, even when he lost the bulk of his monies, he was able to make a comeback, so we didn't suffer any. I don't think we had any time where we didn't have food or anything like that. We were very content with what we had and were able to manage with that. And of course, my sisters, when they graduated high school, they went to work, so they helped in those days to contribute.
So you didn't feel deprived?
No, I didn't feel deprived at all as a child. I knew money my friends did, but I didn't.
And could you tell us something about the Iron Coffin Center,
sure,
which seems to have been important?
The Iron Coffin Center was a place where we all congregated after school and on weekends. And I would say that it was probably a very important part of my life because it was something that I could do and have a good time doing it, namely playing ball, different games. I remember Ziggy Kahn, well, who was the athletic director, who got us all out there when we were like 9 and 10 years old and had us lie on the floor and stretch. Because he said, you're going to be taller than your parents. And the way you're going to do it, you're going to do these stretching exercises. And he did that quite a bit, we did. He wanted us all to be taller than our parents. And then we played well. And then after that, I was lucky enough to be in these shows, and I was in maybe 5 different shows at the center, had musicals plus other shows. So that was a major part of my life until I was 17. I did all that, 16, 17.
Was the Iron Coffin Center for Jewish people only?
No, but primarily 95% were Jewish. And we had a club, and remember my club members, we made my friends for a long time, although we scattered afterwards. And our club was known as the Colleague Club. And we had some C-O-L-L-E-G.
Colleague.
Colleague Club. And we even published a newspaper at that time and would help with the younger kids, advise them if we could. We had about 20 members in our club, have a team, and all the other things that goes with it. With that. So it was, many of our members are gone now, but those that were pretty prominent people in the community as time went on, the great ones.
Tell us some of them.
Well, one was Herman Foreman. There was Nate Miller, Ben Super, a prominent doctor. I don't know whether you know them or not, but I can remember so many of their names. Slipping my mind out.
Right.
But it was a great experience.
Did any of the sociability include girls? Were there dances
yes,
and parties?
Yes. Okay. What happened at this Iron Coffin Settlement in those days came Saturday night, because Friday night they were closed. But Saturday night we had a social get together. As we got older, we became part of this. And there was dancing, and there was other activities. First we took a dancing class, and then we all went dancing afterward. And every Saturday night there was a dance. So we'd meet the girls, and then afterwards some of the girls would invite us up to have parties at their houses, which we did. We thought nothing of going from where I lived in the Woody Street all the way up to Heron Hill to a party, which was like 50 blocks, 40 blocks away. About 3 miles.
Oh, wow. So, each way, 3 miles.
Yeah, 2-3 miles. But we did it, those groups. Uh-huh. And sure, the girls would have parties. Uh-huh. There was a whole lot of us involved in this.
It sounds as though you had a rich social life.
I did. Uh-huh. I did. Uh-huh. Very rich social life. I was not deprived in that respect.
Then, after you was there anything about Fifth Avenue High School that you remember? Did you participate in any activities?
Yes, I did. I was involved. I was active in the class in many ways. I was the lead in the class play. The play was called Tommy, and I was Tommy.
Oh,
so
the play was called Tommy.
Yeah, I was Tommy. And a lot of other programs that we had down there that I was always participating in. One of the highlights, when you think about it, there was a woman that was an employee, or she worked for the Iron Coffin Settlement. She was a social worker. Her name was Anna Helby.
Oh, she's famous.
Okay. One of the highlights of my life was she was never married, never had a child, of course. And one day, one Mother's Day, she sat on the stage while I sang to her the song, you know, Emma's for the many things. And it was an experience that I'll never forget. And neither, as long as she lived, she never forgot anything.
What brought it on?
Well, they wanted to have some special tribute to her.
Oh,
and
I
she
see.
Was like the mother of all of the people up on the hill.
Uh-huh.
And consequently, they decided to have this program. They gave me the privilege of singing to her that day, which was an eventful thing that I didn't forget.
That's a beautiful memory.
Yeah.
By the way, do you remember your address on Dinwiddie
Street?
Sure,
255.
255 Dinwiddie Street. After you graduated from Fifth Avenue High School, is that when you moved to Squirrel
mm-hmm.
Hill? Could you tell us about that?
Sure. We moved. The first move we made was to Douglas Street.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the address by any chance?
No.
Okay. Where was it on Douglas?
It was on Douglas between Hobart and Murray. I'm sorry, between Shady
okay.
and Murray.
Right.
And it was closer to Shady, real close to Shady. But then we rented there, and then we bought it. My folks bought a house on Darlington Road where we lived for many years. And that address was 6518 Darlington Road.
And you were now out of high school, and is this the time when you were in college?
I was in college when we lived on, what did I say the name of the first street?
Douglas?
Douglas.
Uh-huh.
And then I dropped out, and then when we moved, my father was better, we moved. And shortly after, I went into the service in 1942.
Okay. So you did not graduate from Pitt?
No.
Okay. How many years were you at Pitt?
Two.
And then went into the service?
Well, I went to work and then into the service.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I had to work because my father couldn't work.
Uh-huh. Could you tell us something about your early working life when you were a young man and you went in to help your father?
Yes.
Could you describe the business and tell us what you did in it?
Well, my father specialized in non-ferrous metal, which consists of copper, brass, aluminum, and all those products. And we had a warehouse down at the Tri-Street Yards that he had rented. And my job was to help the men there, preparing this metal that we had under my father's supervision. He insisted that I learn all about it. And by preparing it, it meant sorting it and grading it, which I did. It was his theory that you can't tell someone else what to do if you don't know how to do it yourself. And the business grew to the point where before I went to the service, yes, we moved out to Corliss Station.
Is it
Corliss? Corliss.
Is that on...
Where I used to see you there.
Right, near the south side.
Near West End.
Near West End.
In Sheridan.
Right
in Sheridan.
Right.
That's called the Corliss
Sheridan.
Station.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I used to see it. Really
I worked at Langley High School briefly for 1 year.
I remember
that's,
that.
That's how I know Corliss.
Yeah, right. That's how I remember seeing it. And there we expanded and grew. And our business consisted primarily of buying non-ferrous from scrap metal dealers throughout the tri-state area.
Non-ferrous
the
means no
copper,
iron.
Brass, no,
no
iron.
Iron.
No iron.
Right.
And among some of the customers were the Adelson, some of the people, you know, the Annie in Fort City. We bought non-ferrous primarily. Most of these yards were scrap iron yards, but non-ferrous was a side item for them. And the fact that it wasn't the sale, we were the dealer, the wholesale dealer, we'd send trucks out, pick it up, bring it in, and put it into large quantities and ship it all over the country. So that was aluminum and brass and copper and lead, zinc and all of that.
Who bought your
material? Our material was purchased by primarily foundries, refineries, who recycled the word recycle, which is used to recycle it back into primary metal again. Most of the metal that we handled was sold to smelters, refiners, and foundries. And I eventually became president of the association nationally, so I got
did
the
you
business
really?
Department.
National Association of what?
At that time, it was called National Association of Waste Material.
Of Waste Material
yeah.
Dealers.
I was the president of the Metal Dealers Division.
Uh-huh. And you became the president of
the Metal Dealers Division.
Metal Dealers.
You had different, you had paper rags and
you
all
had
that.
The weight, it's Waste Material.
National Association of Waste, NAWMD. National Association of Waste Material Dealers.
Dealers, and you handled. You were president of the
metal dealers.
Of the metal. Did you have? Tell us something about that that organization.
Well, the organization was all over the country, in Canada, and as the president, I would attend meetings in different parts of the country with other dealers. Our biggest problem was with government regulations and government, which I was able to participate in. And that went on for 3 years when I was president prior to that. We have big conventions all over the country. Today it's been combined with the Institute of Scrap Iron and Steel. It's now one organization. At that time it was separate. Our organization had the metal dealers, had the rag people, and the paper, scrap paper. And now it's all one organization with ISRA, I think it's called. So that was my experience in that part of the business. And fortunately, our business grew, and we opened up another company called Microlloy, M-I-C-R-L-O-Y. Where we processed things with steel scrap.
You processed it?
Right. And we sold a couple of mills, and it's still in existence today, this company.
Did you process the...
Stop.